ancient taboo. The sound was so loud it gave me double vision. Several giants stumbled. Unfortunately, Jack had also been affected. He turned heavy and inanimate in my hands, just as one of the giants backhanded me, sending me flying across the cavern. I slammed into a stalagmite. Something in my chest went crack. That probably wasn't good. I struggled to rise, trying to ignore the acid now sloshing around in my ribcage. My vision swam. Uncle Randolph was screaming, his voice blending with the howl of the Skofnung spirits. Mist swirled around him, pluming from the blade as if it had turned to dry ice.
"Hurry, you fool!" Loki yelled, "before the sword dissolves!"
Sobbing, Randolph struck the bonds at Loki's feet. With a sound like a high-tension wire snapping on a bridge, the ties broke.
"No!"
Sam shouted. She lunged forward, but the damage had been done. Loki brought his knees to his chest for the first time in 1,000 years. Sigyn retreated against the far wall, allowing the snake's venom to splash freely in her husband's face. Loki screamed and thrashed. Sam thrust her spear at my uncle, but Loki still had enough presence of mind to yell,
"Samira, freeze!"
Sam did. Her teeth clenched with effort. Her eyes burned with rage. She let loose a guttural howl, almost worse than the Skofnung swords, but she couldn't seem to break Loki's command. Randolph staggered, staring at his smoking sword. The edge was corroding, the black gunk from Loki's bindings chewing away at the magical blade.
"The stone, you idiot!"
Loki kicked at him futilely, turning his face away from the trickle of venom.
"Sharpen the blade and get on with it! You only have a few minutes!"
Smoke continued swirling around Randolph. His skin was starting to turn blue. I realized it wasn't just the sword that was dissolving. The enraged spirits of Skofnung, still howling, were taking out their anger on my uncle. A giant charged me with a ceremonial totem pole. I managed to roll out of the way, my cracked ribs throbbing in protest, and crippled the giant by stabbing his ankles. Alex was still throttling the Giant King. Both of them looked pretty bad. Thrym stumbled, his hands clawing sluggishly at his bride. Blood trickled from Alex's ear, spattering her white dress. I hoped Siv didn't expect us to return it dry-cleaned. Three of the giants had surrounded Thor's hammer again. Now they picked it up, staggering under its weight.
"What do we do with it?" one groaned. "Put it back in the earth?"
"Don't you dare!"
Thringa yelled. She was on her feet now, clutching the axe still embedded in her side.
"That hammer is mine!"
Granted, I didn't know the rules of earth magic, but judging from the effort it had taken Thrym to retrieve the hammer, I doubted any of the giants would be able to sink it 8 miles into the earth again right away. Not in the middle of a battle with weapons flying and berserker spears howling. I was more concerned about the sword. Randolph had already resharpened the blade. As Sam screamed at him to stop, he moved toward Loki's right hand.
"Thringa!" I yelled.
The white giantess glared at me, her inky lips curled into a snarl.
"You want the sword for yourself?" I said, pointing to my uncle. "You'd better hurry."
It seemed like a good idea, turning a murderous giantess on Loki. Unfortunately, Thringa also hated me.
"That sword is finished," she said. "Already dissolving, but perhaps I'll take yours."
She charged. I tried to raise Jack, but he was still dead weight in my hand. Thringa plowed into me and we both skidded across the floor, straight into one of the bubbling pits. Newsflash, pits of boiling liquid are hot. Had I been a regular mortal, I would have died in seconds. Being an Inherii, I figured I had a minute or so before the heat killed me. Hooray! My world was reduced to a boiling roar, a sulfurous yellow haze, and the white shape of the giantess whose fingers were digging into my windpipe. Jack was still in my grip, but that arm felt heavy and useless. With my free hand, I clawed blindly at Thringa, trying to break her grip on my throat. By chance, my fingers found the shaft of Sam's axe still buried in Thringa's side. I yanked it free and swung it in the general vicinity of the giantess's head. The pressure on my throat abruptly loosened. I pushed the giantess away and flailed for the surface. Somehow, I pulled myself, steaming and lobster red, out of the hot springs. More sounds of battle, blades clanging against blades, rocks shattering, giants roaring, the Skofnung sword's spirits continued their bitter howling. I tried to get up, but my skin felt like a cooked sausage casing. I was afraid that if I moved too fast, I might literally burst.
"Jack," I croaked, "go."
Jack left my grip, but he was moving slowly. Maybe he was still dazed by the howling of the spirits. Maybe my own condition was weakening him. It was all he could do to keep the giants from finishing me off. My vision was cloudy white with yellow blobs, as though my eyeballs had turned into hard-boiled eggs. I saw Thrym stagger to the wedding bench, grab it in both hands, and with one final burst of strength, swing it over his head at Alex. It crashed against her scalp, and she dropped off the giant's back. Nearby, I heard another high-tension snap. Loki's right hand was free.
Yes! The god cried.
He rolled to one side, out of the snake's range.
The last one, Randolph, and your family will be returned to you.
Sam was still frozen. She struggled against Loki's will so intensely that a capillary had burst across her forehead, making a dotted red line there. In the light of her spear, Randolph's face looked bluer than ever. His skin was turning translucent, the structure of his skull showing through as he hurried to sharpen the Skullfnug blade for one last strike. Three giants were still staggering around with Thor's hammer, not sure what to do with it. The Giant King turned toward Alex, who now lay stunned on the floor. Another giant approached Sam warily, eyeing her glowing spear, obviously wondering if she was really as helpless as she looked.
Jack, I murmured, my voice like wet sand, but I didn't know what to tell him. I was barely able to move. A dozen giants were still in fighting shape. Loki was almost free. I couldn't save Alex and Sam and stop my uncle all at the same time. It was over.
Then the cavern shook. A bulging rift split the ceiling like the opening claws of a grabber arm, spilling out a dwarf, an elf, and several Inheriar. Blitz struck first. Just as Thrym looked up, momentarily distracted from his desire to kill his bride, a dwarf in paisley chainmail landed on his face. Blitz wasn't heavy, but he had gravity and surprise on his side. The Giant King crumpled beneath him like a pile of blocks. Hearthstone hit the cavern floor with his usual elfish grace and immediately tossed a rune at Loki. I guess the I stood for ice. Suddenly, the god of evil was encased in the stuff, his eyes wide with shock, his left arm still bound to the last stalagmite, making him the ugliest frozen treat I had ever seen. My comrades from Floor 19 launched themselves into battle with glee.
"Death and glory!" Halfborn roared.
"Kill everyone!" Mallory said.
"Charge!" TJ yelled.
TJ bayoneted the nearest giant. Mallory's knives flashed as she took out two more with well-placed crotch strikes. Tip, don't ever fight Mallory Keen without titanium crotch armor. Halfborn Gunderson, our own version of a giant, waded into the battle, shirtless, as usual, with blood-red smiley faces painted all over his chest. I assume Mallory had gotten bored on the tunneling trip down here. Laughing insanely, Halfborn grabbed a giant's head and introduced it to his left knee. Halfborn's knee won. With Loki frozen, Samira was able to shake herself free of his control. She immediately put her spear to work, impaling an advancing giant, then threatening Uncle Randolph.
"Back off!" she snarled.
For a moment, I thought the tide had turned. Giants fell, one after another. I summoned Jack to my hand, and despite my overcooked condition, despite my exhaustion, I managed to get to my feet. The presence of my friends energized me. I staggered over to Alex and helped her up.
"I'm good,"
she muttered, though she looked disoriented and bloody. How she had survived being bashed with a bench was beyond me. I guess she was hard-headed.
He didn't control me. Loki didn't. I was pretending.
She gripped my hand, obviously concerned that I might not believe her.
"I know, Alex," I squeezed her hand. "You did great."
Meanwhile, Blitzen hit Thrym repeatedly in the face with his chainmail bow tie. As he did so, he looked up at me and grinned.
"Thor got in touch with us, kid. Nice work. It was actually easier for me to tunnel here once I knew the location. The gods are still digging their way in from this idiot's lair. The rock is magically hardened by this guy." He punched Thrym in the face again. "But they'll get through it."
The bodies of fallen giants lay strewn across the cavern. The last three standing were the ones guarding Thor's hammer, but they'd been staggering around so much with Mjolnir, back and forth from Thrym to Thringa like a moving crew with an oversized couch, that now they looked completely spent. Halfborn Gunderson made short work of them with his battle axe. Then he stood triumphantly over them, rubbing his hands eagerly.
"I've always wanted to try this."
He strained to lift Mjolnir, but the hammer stayed stubbornly in place. Mallory snorted.
"Like I keep telling you, you are not as strong as three giants. Now help me over here."
"Look out!" Alex cried. Halfborn's effort with the hammer had distracted us from Uncle Randolph and Loki. I turned just as the block of ice shattered, spraying us with frozen shards. In the moment we were blinded, my uncle lunged forward with Skofnung. He struck the last restraint around Loki's left wrist, snapping the bonds. The sword dissipated in a puff of smoke. The chorus of angry berserkers went silent. My uncle dropped to his knees, screaming, his arm beginning to dissolve into blue vapor. In the back of the cave, Sigyn cringed as her husband rose to his feet.
"Free," Loki said, his emaciated body steaming, his face a wasteland of scarred flesh. "Now the fun begins."
Chapter 53. It's hammer time. Someone had to say it. Timing. The Aesir really needed to work on their timing. We still had no godly backup. We had a hammer, but no one to wield it. And Loki stood unchained before us in all his mutilated glory, ice clinging to his hair, poison dripping from his face.
Ah, yes, he smiled. For my first act.
He lashed out with more speed and strength than should have been possible for a guy who'd been chained up for 1,000 years. He grabbed the snake that had been dripping venom on him, yanked it off its stalactite, and snapped it like a whip. Its spine cracked with a sound like bubble wrap popping. Loki dropped it, as lifeless as a garden hose, and turned toward us.
I really hated that snake, he said. Who's next?
Jack lay heavy in my hand. Alex could barely stand. Sam had her spear ready, but she seemed reluctant to charge, probably because she didn't want to be frozen by your father again. Or worse. My other friends closed ranks around me. Three strong in Harriar, Blitzen in his fashionable chainmail, Hearthstone with his rowan wood runes clacking in their bag as his fingers shifted through them.
We can take him, TJ said, his bayonet wet with giant blood. All at once. Ready?
Loki spread his arms in a welcoming gesture. Randolph knelt at his feet, silent in agony as the blue vapor spread up his arm, eating away at his flesh. Against the far wall, Sigyn stood very still, her pure red eyes impossible to read, her empty poison bowl clasped to her chest.
Come on then, warriors of Odin, Loki taunted. I'm unarmed and weak. You can do it.
That's when I knew in my heart that we couldn't. We would charge in and die. We'd end up lying on the floor with our spine snapped, just like that snake. But we had no choice. We had to try. Then, from the wall behind us, came a cracking sound, followed by a familiar voice.
We're through! Yes, Heimdall, I'm sure this time. Probably.
The end of an iron staff poked through the rock and wriggled around. The wall began to crumble. Loki lowered his arms and sighed. He looked more annoyed than terrified.
Ah, well.
He winked at me, or maybe his face was just convulsing from centuries of poison damage.
Next time?
The ground crumbled underneath him. The entire back half of the cavern fell away. Stalagmites and stalactites imploded. Pools of boiling liquid turned into steaming waterfalls before disappearing into the void. Loki and Sigyn fell into nothingness. My uncle, who had been kneeling at the edge of the break, also slipped into the chasm.
Randolph! I scrambled to the edge.
About 50 feet below, Randolph crouched on the wet and steaming slope of rock, trying to keep his balance. His right arm was gone, the blue vapor now crawling up his shoulder. He looked up at me, his skull grinning through his translucent face.
Randolph, hold on, I said.
No, Magnus,
he spoke softly as if he didn't want to wake anyone.
My family.
I am your family, you old idiot!
Maybe that wasn't the most endearing thing to say. Maybe I should have thought good riddance and let him fall. But Annabeth was right. Randolph was family. The whole Chase clan attracted the gods' attention, and Randolph had borne that curse more heavily than most of us. Despite everything, I still wanted to help him. He shook his head, sadness and pain fighting for dominance in his eyes.
I'm sorry. I want to see them.
He slipped sideways into the darkness without a sound. I had no time to grieve, no time even to process what had happened, before three gods in tactical armor burst into the cave. They all wore helmets, infrared goggles, jack boots, and full Kevlar body armor with the letters GRRM across the chest. I might have mistaken them for a regular SWAT team, except for the excessive facial hair and the non-standard issue weapons. Thor stormed in first, holding his iron staff like a rifle, pointing it in every direction.
Check your corners, he yelled.
The next guy through was Heimdall, grinning like he was having an excellent time. He also held his massive sword like a gun, his phablet of doomsday stuck to the end. He swept the room, taking pictures of himself from every angle. The third guy I didn't recognize. He stepped into the cavern with a clang, because his right foot was encased in the most grotesque oversized shoe I had ever seen. It was cobbled together from scraps of leather and metal, pieces of neon athletic shoes, Velcro straps, and old brass buckles. It even had half a dozen stiletto heels sticking up from the toe like porcupine quills. The three gods scampered around looking for threats. With incredibly bad timing, the giant king Thrym began to regain consciousness. The god with the weird shoe rushed over and raised his right foot. His boot grew to the size of a Lincoln town car, a junkyard wedge of old shoe parts and scrap metal all compacted together into a huge death stomper. Thrym didn't even have time to scream before Shuman stepped on him.
Splat!
No more threat.
Good one, Vidar, Heimdall called. Could you do that again so I can snap a picture?
Vidar frowned and pointed at the mess. In perfect ASL, he signed, "He is flat now." Across the room, Thor gasped,
"My baby!"
He ran past his goats and snatched up the hammer Mjolnir.
"At last!
Are you okay, Mimi? Did those nasty giants reprogram your channels?"
Marvin jingled the bells on his collar.
"We're fine, boss," he muttered. "Thanks for asking."
I looked at Sam. Did he just call his hammer Mimi? Alex growled. "Hey, Acer idiots." She pointed to the newly formed abyss.
"Loki went that way."
"Loki?" Thor turned. "Where?"
Lightning flickered through his beard, which probably rendered his infrared goggles useless. With even worse timing than Thrym, the giantess Thringa chose that moment to show she was still alive. She launched herself from the nearest cesspool like a breaching whale and landed at Heimdall's feet, gasping and steaming.
"Kill you all!" she croaked,
which wasn't the smartest thing to say when facing three gods in tactical armor. Thor pointed his hammer at Thringa as casually as if he were channel surfing. Tendrils of lightning shot from the runes engraved in the metal. The giantess burst into a million bits of rubble.
"Dude!" Heimdall complained. "What did I tell you about lightning so close to my phablet? You want to fry the motherboard?"
Thor grunted.
"Well, mortals, it's a good thing we arrived when we did, or that giantess might have hurt someone. Now, what were you saying about Loki?"
"The thing about gods is, you can't really slap them when they're acting stupid. They'll just slap you back and kill you. Besides, I was too exhausted, shocked, boiled, and grief-stricken to complain much, even though the Aesir had let Loki get away. No," I corrected myself. "We let Loki get away." While Thor murmured sweet nothings to his hammer, Heimdall stood at the edge of the chasm and peered into the darkness.
"Goes all the way to Helheim. No sign of Loki."
"My uncle?" I asked. Heimdall's white irises turned toward me. For once he wasn't smiling.
"You know, Magnus, sometimes it's best not to look as far as you're able to look, or to listen to everything you're able to hear."
He patted me on the shoulder and walked away, leaving me to wonder what the heck he meant. Vidar, the god with the shoe, went around checking for wounded, but everybody seemed more or less okay. Everybody aside from the giants, that is. All of them were now dead. Halfborn had pulled his groin trying to pick up Thor's hammer. Mallory had given herself a stomachache laughing at him, but both those problems were easily fixed. TJ had come through without a scratch, though he was worried how to get Earth Giant blood off the stock of his rifle. Harstone was fine, though he kept signing Othala, the name of his missing runestone. He signed to Blitz that he could have stopped Loki if he'd had it. I suspected he was just being too hard on himself, but I wasn't sure. As for Blitz, he leaned against the cave wall and sipped from a canteen, looking tired after stone sculpting all the way into Loki's cavern. As soon as the gods had arrived, Jack had turned back into a pendant, muttering something about not wanting to see Heimdall's diva sword. In truth, I think he mostly felt guilty that he hadn't been more help to us, and sorry that Skofnung had turned out not to be the blade of his dreams. Now Jack hung around my neck again, snoozing fitfully. Fortunately, he hadn't suffered any damage, and he'd been so stunned throughout most of the fight that I'd hardly absorbed any fatigue from him at all. He would live to fight, and sing top 40 songs, another day. Sam, Alex, and I sat at the edge of the chasm, listening to the echoes in the darkness. Vidar wrapped my ribs, then dabbed some salve on my arms and face, and told me in sign language that I wouldn't die. He also bandaged Alex's ear, and signed, "Minor concussion, stay awake." Sam herself had no major physical injuries, but I can sense the emotional pain radiating from her. She sat with her spear across her lap like a kayak paddle, looking as though she were ready to navigate straight to Helheim. I think Alex and I both knew instinctively that we shouldn't leave her alone.
"I was helpless again," she said miserably. He controlled me."
Alex patted her leg.
"Not entirely true. You're alive."
I looked back and forth between them.
"What do you mean?"
Alex's darker eye was more dilated than the lighter one, probably because of the concussion. It made her stare look even more hollow and shell-shocked.
"When things went bad during the fight," she said, "Loki just willed us to die. He told my heart to stop beating, my lungs to stop breathing. I assume he did the same to Sam."
Samira nodded, her knuckles whitening on the shaft of her spear.
"Gods,
I didn't know what to do with all the anger inside me. My chest boiled at the same temperature as the cesspool. If I hadn't hated Loki enough already, now I was determined to follow him to the ends of the Nine Worlds and do something really bad to him. Like, tie him down with his children's guts? Asked a little voice in my head. Put a venomous snake over his face? How did that sort of justice work out for the Acer? So you did resist him, I told the girls. That's good. Alex shrugged. I told you, he can't control me. Earlier I was just acting so he wouldn't get suspicious. But Sam, yeah. That was a good first start. You stayed alive. You can't expect complete resistance right away. We can work on it together.
He's free, Alex! Sam snapped. We failed! I failed! If I'd been faster, if I'd realized—
Failed? The Thunder God loomed over us. Nonsense, girl! You retrieved my hammer! You are heroes and will all receive trophies!
I could see Sam gritting her teeth, trying not to yell at Thor. I was afraid she'd bust another capillary from the strain.
I appreciate that, Lord Thor, she said at last. But Loki never cared about the hammer. It was all a smokescreen to get himself freed.
Thor frowned and raised Mjolnir.
Oh, don't you worry, lass. We'll put Loki back in chains. And I promise you, he will care about this hammer when I ram it down his throat.
Brave words, but when I looked around at my friends, I could tell that no one was reassured. I stared at the letters on Thor's Kevlar vest. What is GRRM anyway?
It's pronounced GRRM, Thor said. An acronym for God Rapid Response Mobilization.
Rapid? Alex snarled. Are you kidding me? You guys took forever to get here.
Now, Heimdall stepped in. You were a moving target, weren't you? We got into the tunnel at Bridal Veil Falls just fine. But then the whole moving to Loki's lair thing, that caught us off guard. We were sealed in at both ends with Earth Giant hardened stone. Digging after you, well, even with three gods, that was tough.
Especially when one takes pictures and does not help, Vidar signed. The other two gods ignored him, but Hearthstone signed back. They never listen, do they? I know, signed the god. Hearing people. Silly. I decided I liked Vidar. Excuse me, I asked him, signing as I spoke. Are you the god of shoes, or healing, or... Vidar smirked. He crooked both of his index fingers. He placed one under his eye, then tapped that finger with the other hooked one. I hadn't seen that sign before, but I got it. Eye for an eye, talons and hooks. You're the god of vengeance. That seemed odd to me, since he seemed so kind and was mute. Then again, you weren't an expanding shoe that could stomp giant kings flat.
Oh, Vidar is our go-to guy for emergencies, Heimdall said. That shoe of his is made from every shoe scrap that has ever been thrown away. It can... Well, you saw what it can do. Hey, do you think we can get a group shot with everyone?
No, said everyone.
Thor glared at the Bridge Guardian.
Vidar is also called the Silent One, which means he doesn't talk. He also doesn't take selfies constantly, which makes him good company.
Mallory Keene sheathed her twin knives.
Well, that's fascinating, I'm sure. But shouldn't you, Acer, be doing something productive now, like... Oh, finding Loki and tying him up again?
The girl is right, Vidar signed. Time is wasting.
Listen to brave Vidar, girl, said Thor. Loki's capture can wait for another day. Right now we should be celebrating the return of my hammer.
That's not what I said, Vidar signed.
Besides, Thor added, I don't need to search for the scoundrel. I know exactly where he's going.
You do? I asked. Where? Thor pounded me on the back, fortunately with his hand and not his hammer.
We'll talk all about it back at Valhalla. Dinner is on me!
Chapter 54. Squirrels in the Window May Be Larger Than They Appear. I love it when gods offer to pay for dinner that's already free. Almost as much as I love assault squads that show up after the assault. I never got the chance to complain about it, though. Once we got back to Valhalla, thanks to Thor's very overcrowded chariot, we were given a celebration feast that was wild even by Viking standards. Thor paraded around the feast hall, holding Mjolnir above his head, grinning and yelling,
Death to our enemies!
And generally causing a commotion. Party horns were blown, mead was guzzled, piñatas were cracked open with a mighty Mjolnir, and candy was eaten. Only our little group sulked, clustered around our table and half-heartedly accepting the pats on the back and compliments from our fellow in Harjar. They assured us we were heroes. Not only had we retrieved Thor's hammer,
We had destroyed an entire wedding party of evil, badly dressed Earth giants. Nobody complained about Blitz and Hart's presence. Nobody paid much attention to our new friend Vidar, despite his strange footwear. The Silent One lived up to his name and sat with us silently, occasionally asking Hearthstone questions in a form of sign language I didn't recognize. Heimdall left early to get back to the Bifrost Bridge. There were important selfies to be taken. Meanwhile, Thor partied like a madman, body surfing over crowds of Inheriar and Valkyries. Whatever he had wanted to tell us about Loki's location, he seemed to have forgotten, and I wasn't going to get anywhere near him in that mob. My only consolation? Some of the lords at the Thane's table also looked uneasy. Every once in a while, Helgi the manager would scowl at the crowd as if he wanted to scream what I was thinking. Stop celebrating, you idiots! Loki is free! Maybe the Inheriar were choosing not to worry about it. Maybe Thor had assured them, too, that it was a problem easily fixed. Or maybe they were celebrating because Ragnarok was near. That idea scared me the most. As dinner ended, Thor rode off in his chariot without even acknowledging us. He bellowed to the assembled host that he had to hurry to the borders of Midgard and demonstrate his hammer's power by blasting some giant armies to sizzly bits. The Inheriar cheered and then began streaming out of the feast hall, no doubt heading to smaller but even wilder parties. Vidar said his goodbyes after a short conversation with Hearthstone in that strange language. Whatever he said, the elf chose not to share it with us. My hallmates offered to stay with me, but they had been invited to an after-party, and I told them to go. They deserved some fun after the tedium of digging their way into Loki's cavern. Sam, Alex, Blitz, and Hearth accompanied me to the elevators. Before we got there, Helgi appeared and grabbed my arm.
You and your friends need to come with me.
The manager's voice was grim. I got the feeling we would not be receiving trophies and coupons for our brave deeds. Helgi led us through passageways I'd never seen before, up staircases into the far reaches of the hotel. I knew Valhalla was big, but each time I went exploring, I was newly amazed. The place went on forever, like Costco or a chemistry lecture. At last, we arrived at a heavy oaken door with a brass plaque that read, Manager. Helgi pushed open the door and we followed him inside to an office. Three of the walls and the ceiling were paneled in spears, polished oak shafts tipped with gleaming silver points. Behind Helgi's desk, the back wall was one huge plate glass window overlooking the endless swaying branches of the World Tree. I'd seen a lot of different views from the windows of Valhalla. The hotel had access to each of the nine worlds, but I'd never seen a view straight into the tree. It made me feel disoriented, like we were floating in its branches, which, cosmically speaking, we were. Sit. Helgi waved to a semicircle of chairs on the visitor's side of the desk. Sam, Alex, Blitz, Hearth, and I got comfortable, with lots of squeaking leather and creaking wood. Helgi plopped himself down behind his huge mahogany desk, which was empty except for one of those desk toy thingies with the hanging silver ball bearings that you can knock back and forth. Oh, and the ravens. At either front corner of the desk perched one of Odin's twin ravens, both of them glaring at me as if trying to decide whether to assign me detention or feed me to the trolls. Helgi leaned back and steepled his fingers. He would have looked intimidating if it weren't for his roadkill explosion of hair and the leftover bits of feast beast in his beard. Sam fiddled nervously with her ring of keys.
Sir, what happened in Loki's cave? It wasn't my friend's fault. I take full responsibility.
The hell, Haim, you do? Alex snapped. Sam did nothing wrong. If you're going to punish anyone... Stop! Helgi ordered. No one is getting punished! Blitzen exhaled with relief. Well, that's good, because we didn't have time to return this to Thor. But honestly, we meant to. Hearthstone produced Thor's 2x4 hall pass key and set it on the manager's desk. Helgi frowned. He slipped the pass into his desk drawer, which made me wonder how many others he had in there. You are here, said the manager, because Odin's ravens asked for you. Hugin and Munin? Thought and memory, I recalled from the Hotel Valhalla guide. The birds made that weird croaking noise ravens love to make, as if regurgitating the souls of all the frogs they'd eaten over the centuries. They were much larger than normal ravens, and creepier. Their eyes were like gateways into the void. Their feathers were 1,000 different shades of ebony. When light hit them, runes seemed to glisten in their plumage. Dark words rising out of a sea of black ink. Helgi tapped his desk toy. The balls started swinging and hitting each other with an annoying click, click, click. Odin would be here, said the manager, but he is tending to other matters. Hugin and Munin represent him. As a bonus, Helgi leaned forward and lowered his voice.
The ravens don't show motivational PowerPoints.
The bird squawked in agreement. Now, Down to business, Helgi said. Loki has escaped, but we know where he is. Samira Alabas, your next mission as Odin's Valkyrie in charge of special operations will be to find your father and put him back in chains. Samira lowered her head. She didn't look surprised. More like she'd lost the final appeal for a death sentence she'd been fighting her entire life.
Sir, she said, I will do as I'm ordered. But after what happened the last two times I faced my father, the ease with which he controlled me...
You can learn to fight it, Alex interrupted.
I can help. I'm not you, Alex. I can't...
Sam gestured vaguely at her sister, as if to indicate all the things Alex was that Sam could never be. Helgi brushed some food scraps out of his beard. Samira, I didn't say it would be easy, but the ravens say you can do it. You must do it, and so you shall. Sam stared at the ball bearings bouncing back and forth. Click, click, click.
This place where my father went, she said. Where is it?
The Eastern Shores, Helgi said. Just as the old stories say, now that Loki is free, he has gone to the docks, where he hopes to complete construction of Naglfar. Harshstone signed, The Ship of Nails, that is not good. I felt cold and seasick. I remembered visiting that ship in a dream, standing on the deck of a Viking longboat the size of an aircraft carrier and made entirely from the toenails and fingernails of the dead. Loki had warned me that when Ragnarok began, he would sail the ship to Asgard, destroy the gods, steal their Pop-Tarts, and otherwise cause mass chaos. If Loki is free, is it already too late? I asked. Isn't his unbinding one of the things that signals the beginning of Ragnarok? Yes and no, Helgi said. I waited. Am I supposed to pick one? The unbinding of Loki does help start Ragnarok, Helgi said, but nothing says this escape is his last and final escape. It's conceivable you could recapture him and put him back, thus postponing Doomsday. Like we did with Fenris Wolf, Blitz muttered. That was a piece of cake. Exactly, Helgi nodded enthusiastically. Cake! I was being sarcastic, Blitz said. I suppose they don't have sarcasm in Valhalla any more than they have decent barbers. Helgi reddened. See here, dwarf! He was interrupted by a huge brown and orange shape slamming into his window. Blitzen fell out of his chair. Alex leaped straight up and clung to the ceiling in the form of a sugar glider. Sam rose with her axe in hand, ready for battle. I valiantly took cover down in front of Helgi's desk. Harshstone just sat there, frowning at the giant squirrel. Why? He signed. It's all right, everyone, Helgi assured us. It's just Ratatosk. The words just Ratatosk did not compute. I'd been chased through the world tree by that monstrous rodent. I'd heard his soul-searing, scolding voice. It was never all right when he showed up. No, really, Helgi insisted. The window is soundproof and squirrel-proof. The beast just likes to stop by and taunt me sometimes. I peeked over the top of the desk. Ratatosk was barking and screeching, but only the faintest murmur came through the glass. He gnashed his teeth at us and pressed his cheek against the window. The ravens didn't seem bothered. They glanced over as if to say, Oh, it's you. Then went back to preening their feathers. How do you stand it? Blitzen asked. That thing is deadly. The squirrel puffed his mouth against the glass, showing us his teeth and gums, then licked the window. I'd rather know where he is than not, Helgi said. Sometimes I can tell what's going on in the Nine Worlds just by observing the squirrel's level of agitation. Judging from Ratatosk's current state, I guess some serious stuff was going down in the Nine Worlds. To alleviate our anxiety, Helgi rose, lowered the blinds, and sat back down. Where were we? He said. Ah, yes, cake and sarcasm. Alex dropped from the ceiling and returned to her regular form. She changed out of her wedding dress earlier and was back in her old diamond-patterned sweater vest. She tugged at it casually as if to say, Yes, I totally meant to turn into a sugar glider. Sam lowered her axe.
Helgi, about this mission, I wouldn't know where to start, where the ship is docked. The Eastern Shores could be on any world.
The manager turned up his palms. I don't have those answers, Samira, but Hugin and Munin will brief you privately. Go with them to the high places of Valhalla. Let them show you thoughts and memories. To me, that sounded like some trippy vision quest with Darth Vader appearing in a foggy cave. Sam didn't look too happy about it either.
But, Helgi...
There can be no debate, the manager insisted. Odin chose you. He has chosen this entire group because... He paused abruptly and put a finger to his ear. I'd never realized Helgi wore an earpiece, but he was obviously listening to something. He glanced up at us. Apologies. Where was I? Ah, yes, all five of you were present when Loki escaped. Therefore, all five of you will have a part to play in recapturing the outlaw god.
We broke it, we bought it, I muttered.
Exactly, Helgi grinned. Now that that's settled, you'll have to excuse me. There's been a massacre in the yoga studio, and they need clean mats. Chapter 55. Daisies in the Shape of an Elf. As soon as we left the office, the Ravens led Sam up another staircase. She glanced back at us uneasily, but Helgi had been pretty clear that the rest of us weren't invited. Alex turned on her heel and marched off in the opposite direction.
Hey, I called. Where?
She looked back, her eyes so angry I couldn't finish my question.
Later, Magnus, she said. I have to...
She made a strangling gesture with her hands.
Just later.
That left me with Blitzen and Hearthstone, who were both swaying on their feet. You guys want to...
Sleep?
Blitzen said.
Please, immediately.
I led them back to my room. The three of us camped in the grass in the middle of my atrium. It reminded me of the old days, sleeping in the public garden, but I'm not going to tell you I was nostalgic for being homeless. Homelessness is not something any sane person would ever be nostalgic about. Still, like I've said, it was a lot simpler than being an undead warrior who chased fugitive gods across the nine worlds and conducted serious conversations while a monstrous squirrel made faces at you in the window. Hearthstone conked out first. He curled up, sighed gently, and went right to sleep. When he was still, despite his black clothes, he seemed to blend into the shadows of the grass. Maybe it was elf camouflage, a remnant of the time when they were one with nature. Blitz wedged his back against a tree and stared at Hearth with concern.
We're going to Blitzen's Best tomorrow, he told me. Reopen the shop. Spend a few weeks trying to regroup and get back to... whatever normal is. Before we have to go and find...
The prospect of taking on Loki again was so daunting he couldn't even finish the thought. I felt guilty that I hadn't considered Hearthstone's grief the past few days. I'd been too preoccupied with Thor's stupid TV hammer. That's a good idea, I said. Alfheim was rough for him. Blitz clasped his hands near where the Skofnung sword had pierced him.
Yeah, I'm worried about Hearth's unfinished business there.
I wish I'd been more help to him, I said. To both of you.
Nah, kid. Some kinds of help you have to do for yourself.
Hearth, he's got a dad-shaped hole in his heart. You can't do anything about that. His dad will never be a nice guy.
No kidding.
But Hearth has to come to terms with that. Sooner or later, he'll have to go back and face him. Get his inheritance room back one way or another. When and how that will happen, though, he shrugged helplessly. I thought about my Uncle Randolph. How did you decide when someone was irretrievably lost? When they were so evil or toxic or just plain set in their ways that you had to face the fact that they were never going to change? How long could you keep trying to save them, and when did you give up and grieve for them as though they were dead? It was easy for me to advise Hearthstone on his father. The dude was way past horrible. But my own uncle, who had gotten me killed, stabbed my friend, and freed the god of evil, I still couldn't quite bring myself to write him off. Blitzen patted my hand.
Whatever happens, kid, we'll be ready when you need us. I'll see this through and get Loki back in chains, even if I have to make those chains myself.
Yours would be a lot more fashionable, I said.
Blitz's mouth twitched. Yeah. Yeah, they would. And don't feel guilty, kid. You did good.
I wasn't so sure about that. What had I accomplished? I felt like I'd spent the last 6 days scrambling around doing damage control, trying to keep my friends alive, trying to minimize the fallout from Loki's plot. I imagine what Samira would say.
That's enough, Magnus.
She'd probably point out that I'd helped Amir. I managed to heal Blitzen. I'd gotten Thor's assault team into the giant's lair to retrieve the hammer. I'd bowled a really mean game of doubles with my partner, the African bush elephant. Still, Loki was free. He'd hurt Sam. He'd crushed her confidence badly. And then there was that little thing about all the nine worlds now at risk of being thrown into chaos. I feel terrible, Blitz, I admitted. The more I train, the more powers I learn. It just seems like the problems get 10 times bigger than what I can handle. Is that ever going to stop? Blitz didn't answer. His chin rested on his chest. He was quietly snoring. I put a blanket over him. I sat for a long time watching the stars through the tree branches and thinking about holes in people's hearts. I wondered what Loki was doing right now. If I were him, I would be planning the most massive revenge spree the Nine Worlds had ever seen. Maybe that's why Vidar, the god of vengeance, had seemed so gentle and quiet. He knew it didn't take much to start a chain reaction of violence and death. One insult,
one theft, one severed chain. Thrym and Thringa had nursed a grudge for generations. They'd been used by Loki not just once, but twice. And now they were dead. I don't remember falling asleep. When I woke the next morning, Blitz and Hearth were gone. A bed of daisies bloomed where Hearthstone had slept. Maybe it was his way of saying goodbye, thank you, see you soon. I still felt depressed. I showered and got dressed. Just brushing my teeth felt ridiculously normal after the last few days. I was about to head to breakfast when I noticed a note slipped under my door in Samira's elegant cursive. Some ideas. Thinking cup? I'll be there all morning. I stepped into the hallway. I liked the idea of getting out of Valhalla for a little while. I wanted to talk to Sam. I wanted good mortal coffee. I wanted to sit in the sunshine and eat a poppy seed muffin and pretend that I wasn't an Inherii with a fugitive god to catch. Then I looked across the hall. First, I needed to do one more difficult and dangerous thing. I needed to check on Alex Fierro. Alex opened the door and greeted me with a cheerful, "Get lost." Wet clay spackled Alex's face and hands. I glanced inside and saw the project sitting on the potter's wheel. "Dude." I stepped inside. For some reason, Alex let me. All the shattered pottery had been cleaned up. The racks were filled with new pots and cups, just drying and still unglazed. On the wheel stood a huge vase, about 3 feet tall, shaped like a trophy. I grinned. "For Sieve?" Alex shrugged. "Yeah, if it turns out okay." "Is this gift ironic or serious?" "You're going to make me choose?" "I don't know, it just felt right to do." At first I hated her. She reminded me of my stepmother, all fussy and uptight. But maybe I should cut her some slack. Over on the bed lay the gold and white wedding dress, still spattered with blood, the hem caked in dust and spotted with acid stains. Nevertheless, Alex had smoothed it out very carefully, like it was something worth keeping.
Magnus, you had some reason to stop by?"
"Yeah." I found it hard to concentrate. I stared at the rows of pots all perfectly shaped.
"You made all these last night?"
I picked one up. Alex took it out of my hands.
"No, you can't touch it, Magnus. Thanks for asking, Magnus."
"Yes, most of these were last night. I couldn't sleep. The pottery, it makes me feel better."
"Now you were about to say why you came over and then quickly get out of my hair?"
"I'm going to meet Sam in Boston." I thought
that I'd want to come with.
"No thanks. When Sam is ready to talk, she knows where to find me." Alex marched back to the wheel, picked up a scraper, and started smoothing the sides of the trophy cup.
"You're angry with her?"
Alex kept scraping. "That's a pretty impressive vase," I offered. "I don't know how you can shape something that large without it falling apart." "I tried to use a wheel in, like, fifth grade art class. The best I could manage was an off-center lump."
"A self-portrait, then?"
"Ha-ha. Just saying, I wish I could do something this cool." No immediate reply, maybe because I hadn't left much room for a witty insult. Finally, Alex glanced up warily.
"You heal people, Magnus. Your dad is actually a helpful god. You've got this whole sunshiny, warm, friendly thing going on. That's not enough cool stuff for you?"
"I've never been called sunshiny before."
"Oh, please. You pretend like you're all tough and sarcastic or whatever, but you're a big softy. And to answer your question, yes, I'm mad at Sam. Unless she changes her attitude, I'm not sure I can teach her."
"To resist Loki." Alex picked up a lump of clay and squeezed it.
"The secret is, you have to be comfortable changing. All the time. You have to make Loki's power your power.
Like your tattoo."
Alex shrugged. "Clay can be shaped and reshaped over and over. But if it gets too dry, if it sets, then there's only so much you can do with it. When it gets to that point, you'd better be sure it's in the shape you want it to have forever."
"You're saying Sam can't change?"
"I don't know if she can, or even if she wants to. But I do know this. If she won't let me teach her how I resist Loki, if she won't at least try, then the next time we face him, we're all dead."
I took a shaky breath. "Okay. Good pep talk. I guess I'll see you at dinner tonight." When I got to the door, Alex said,
"How did you know?"
I turned. "Know what?"
"When you walked in, you said, 'Dude, how did you know I was male?'"
I thought about it. At first, I wondered if it had just been a throwaway comment, a non-gender-specific dude. The more I considered, though, the more I realized I genuinely picked up on the fact that Alex was male. Or rather, Alex had been male. Now, after we'd been talking for a few minutes, she definitely seemed like a she. But how I'd sensed that, I had no idea. Just my perceptive nature, I guess. Alex snorted. Right. But you're a girl now. She hesitated. Yeah. Interesting. You can leave now. Will you make me a trophy for my perceptiveness? She picked up a pottery shard and threw it at me. I closed the door just as it shattered on the inside. Chapter 56. Let's try this whole meeting for coffee thing again. Judging from the line of empty cups, Sam was on her third espresso. The idea of approaching an armed Valkyrie with three espressos in her system was usually not advisable, but I walked up slowly and sat across from her. She didn't look at me. Her attention was on the two raven feathers in front of her. It was a windy morning. Sam's green hijab rippled around her face like waves on a beach, but the two raven feathers didn't flutter. Hey, she said. It was a lot friendlier than get lost. Sam was so different from Alex, but there was something similar in their eyes, a sense of urgency churning just below the surface. It wasn't easy thinking about Loki's inheritance battling inside my two friends, trying to take control. You got feathers, I noted. She touched the one on the left. A memory. And this one, she tapped the right. A thought. The ravens don't really speak. They stare at you and let you stroke their plumage until the right feathers drop out. So what do they mean? This one, the memory, Sam ran a finger down the barbs. It's ancestral. From my distant forefather, Ahmad ibn Fadlan ibn al-Abbas. The guy who traveled among the Vikings. Sam nodded. When I took the feather, I could see his journey like I was there. I learned a lot of things he never wrote about. Things he didn't think would go over well in the court of the Caliph of Baghdad. He saw Norse gods, I guessed. Valkyries, giants. And more. He also heard legends about the ship Naglfar. The place where it's docked, the eastern shores, lies in the border between Jotunheim and Niflheim. The wildest, most remote part of either world. It's completely inaccessible, locked in ice except for one day of the year, midsummer. So that's when Loki will plan to set sail. And that's when we'll have to be there to stop him. I craved an espresso, but my heart was racing so fast I doubted I needed one. So what now? We just wait until summer? It's going to take time to find his location. And before we can leave, we'll need to prepare, train, make sure we can beat him. I remembered what Alex had said. I'm not sure I can teach her. We'll make it happen. I tried to sound confident. What did the second feather tell you? That's a thought, Samir said. A plan to move forward. To reach the eastern shores, we'll need to sail through the farthest branches of the world tree, through the old Viking lands. That's where giant magic is strongest, and where we'll find the sea passage to Naglfar's dock. The old Viking lands. My fingers tingled. I wasn't sure whether it was with excitement or fear. Scandinavia? I'm pretty sure there are flights from Logan. Sam shook her head. We'll have to go by sea, Magnus, the way the Vikings came here. Just as you can only enter Alfheim through the air, we can only reach the wild borderlands of the eastern shores through salt water and ice. Right, I said. Because nothing is ever easy. No, it's not. Her tone was distracted. Wistful. It made me realize I was being kind of insensitive. Sam had a lot of other problems going on besides her evil father. How's Amir? I asked. She actually smiled. In the wind, her hijab seemed to shapeshift from waves to grassy fields to smooth glass. He's very good, she said. He accepts me. He doesn't want to cancel our engagement. You were right, Magnus. He's a lot stronger than I gave him credit for.
That's great. What about your grandparents and his dad?
Samir laughed dryly. Well, we can't have everything. They remember nothing about Loki's visits. They know that Amir and I have made up. For now, all is well. I'm back to making excuses about why I have to rush off in the middle of class or after school. I'm doing a lot of tutoring, she put the word in air quotes. I remembered how weary she'd looked when I met her here 6 days ago. If anything, she looked more tired now. Something's gotta give, Sam, I told her. You're running yourself ragged. I know. She put her hand over the feather of thought. I've promised Amir, once we recapture Loki, once I am sure that Ragnarok has been averted, at least for the present, then I'm done.
Done?
I'm retiring from the Valkyries. I'll devote myself to college, completing my pilot's training, and marriage, of course. But I'm 18, as we've planned.
She was blushing like, well, like a bride. I tried to ignore the hollow feeling in my chest.
And that's what you want?
It's entirely my choice. Amir supports it.
Valkyries can resign?
Of course. It's not like being,
an Inheri, she meant. I was one of the reborn. I could travel the worlds. I had amazing strength and stamina. But I would never again be a normal human. I would stay as I was, the same age forever, or until Ragnarok, whichever came first.
Certain restrictions may apply. Read your service agreement for full details.
Magnus, I know I brought you into this weird afterlife, she said. It's not fair of me to leave you, but...
Hey. I touched her hand just briefly. I knew that wasn't Sam's thing, but she and my cousin Annabeth were the closest thing I would ever have to sisters.
Samira, I just want you to be happy. And, you know, if we can keep the Nine Worlds from burning before you leave, that would be nice too.
She laughed.
All right then, Magnus, it's a deal. We'll need a ship. We'll need a lot of things, actually.
Yeah. Salt and ice seem to be making themselves at home in my throat already. I remembered our encounter in January with the sea goddess Ran. How she'd warned me that I would be in trouble if I ever tried to sail the seas again.
First, we need advice, I said, about sailing across magical waters, fighting weird sea monsters, and not dying at the hands of a bunch of angry aquatic gods. Strangely enough, I know just the person to talk to.
Your cousin, Sam guessed.
Yeah, I said. Annabeth.
Chapter 57. I call in some favors. Texting and calling didn't work, so I sent a raven. When I told TJ that I was having trouble getting in touch with my cousin, he looked at me like I was dense.
Just send a bird, Magnus.
Stupid me. I'd spent months in Valhalla not realizing I could rent a raven, tie a message to its leg, and send it to find anybody in the Nine Worlds. The whole thing seemed a little too Game of Thronesy to me, but whatever, it worked. The raven came back promptly with Annabeth's reply. We coordinated train rides and met halfway between Boston and Manhattan, in New London, Connecticut. Annabeth was there before me, standing on the platform in jeans and sandals and a long-sleeve purple shirt with a laurel wreath design and the letters SPQR-UNR. She hugged me until my eyeballs bugged out like Fringa's.
I was so relieved, she said. I never thought I'd be glad to see a raven at my window, but are you okay?
Yeah, yeah. I had to suppress a nervous laugh, because okay was a stupid word to describe how I felt. Also, it was obvious Annabeth was not okay either. Her gray eyes seemed heavy and weary, less like storm clouds today, and more like fog banks that couldn't quite lift. A lot to talk about, I said. Let's get some lunch. We got a table on the deck of the Muddy Waters Cafe. I suppose the place was named after the blues musician, but it seemed a little ominous considering the waters I was getting ready to sail through. Annabeth and I sat in the sunshine, ordered Cokes and cheeseburgers, and watched the sailboats heading out to Long Island Sound.
It's been crazy in New York, Annabeth said. I thought communications were only down among demigods. I mean, my kind, the Greek and Roman, but then I realized I hadn't heard from you either. I'm sorry that didn't dawn on me sooner.
Wait, why are communications down? Annabeth poked at the table with her forked tines. Her blonde hair was loose around her shoulders today. She seemed to be growing it out. It caught the sunlight in a way that reminded me of Siv, but I tried to shake that idea. I knew Annabeth would destroy anyone who dared call her a trophy anything.
There's a crisis happening, Annabeth said. A god fell to Earth as a human. These evil Roman emperors are back causing trouble.
Oh, so just the usual then.
She laughed. Yeah. Somehow these evil Romans found a way to mess up communication among demigods. Not just the usual magical kinds of talking, but also cell phones, Wi-Fi, you name it. I'm surprised your raven made it to me. I would have come to Boston to check on you sooner, but...
She shrugged helplessly.
I've had my hands full.
I totally get it, I said. I probably shouldn't be distracting you. You've got enough to deal with.
She reached across the table and squeezed my hand.
Are you kidding? I want to help. What's going on?
It felt so good to tell her everything. I remembered how weird it had been the first time we'd compared notes. Her with the Greek gods, me with the Norse. We'd both left that day feeling like we'd overcharged our batteries and our brains were melting. Now, at least we had some kind of framework to build on. Sure, it was all still ridiculously crazy. If I stopped to think about it too long, I would start giggling like a lunatic. But I could tell Annabeth my problems without worrying that she wouldn't believe me. It made me realize how much Sam must appreciate being able to be totally truthful with Amir. I told Annabeth about Loki's escape and Sam's idea for tracking him down, about an icy harbor at the farthest borders of Jotunheim and Niflheim, or Scandinavia, whichever came first. "A boat trip," she said. "Oh boy, that brings back painful memories." "Yeah, I remembered what you said about sailing to Greece and... yeah." I didn't want to bring up all that horrible stuff again. She had cried when she told me about the things that had happened to her during their voyage, especially how she and her boyfriend, Percy, had fallen into some underworld place called Tartarus. "Look," I said, "I don't want to put any pressure on you. I just thought, I don't know, maybe you'd have some ideas, some pointers." A train rumbled through the station. My view of the bay flickered between the rail cars like an old, out-of-alignment reel-to-reel movie. "You say you have problems with sea gods," Annabeth said. "Yeah, Ran. This bag lady with a net. And I guess her husband hates me too now. His name is Aegir." Annabeth tapped her forehead. "I need more memory storage for all these names. Okay, I don't know how this works with multiple sea gods. Are the Norse ones just in the north and Poseidon is in the south? Or do they do, like, a timeshare program?" I remembered an old cartoon with sheepdogs punching time clocks as they came in for different shifts to keep the wolves away from the flocks. I wondered if gods had punch cards like that, or maybe they all worked from home. Could sea gods telecommute? "I don't know," I admitted, "but I'd like to avoid getting all my friends drowned in a tsunami as soon as we leave Boston."
"But you've got some time?"
"Until this summer," I said. "We can't leave while the seas are frozen or something."
"Good. We'll be done with school by then, finally graduated."
"I don't go to school."
"Oh, you mean we as in you and your boyfriend?"
"Exactly. Assuming he passes his semester and does okay on his standardized tests. Assuming these evil Roman emperors don't kill us all and destroy the world." "Yeah, Loki would be seriously ticked off if Roman emperors destroyed the world before he got to start Ragnarok."
"We should have enough time to help you. At least compare notes. Maybe call in some favors."
What favors?" Annabeth smiled.
"I don't know the ocean very well, but my boyfriend does. I think it's time you met Percy."
This is Kieran Culkin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, Book 2, The Hammer of Thor, by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2016 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.